Assalamualaikum warahmatullahi wabarakatuh. This is AB Dauji, and of course, this is The Big Picture. Your weekly dose of Panchat, hardcore news analysis, taking pot shots at all the big shots, and shining the spotlight on the silly fools and chorwans, and along the way, having a few laughs also. A pinch of maja. And talking about laughs, the other day, I read about a chap who many years ago wrote a regular column in our morning newspaper. Regular column. It was a funny column. Something like the Idlers column. You may have read that, you people in Durban, in the Mercury. So he wrote something like that. And just very recently he passed away, and another columnist remembers how this chap made the people of Ladysmith very cross, angry. Some of them didn't have a sense of humor, you see. He wrote in one of his columns that Ladysmith had a beauty contest. Ladysmith had a beauty contest and nobody won. Well, the grumpies were not impressed by this statement, and they wrote stinking letters to the editor of the newspaper. The columnist, this chap who was writing the column, he responded later on that Ladysmith had a Miss Lucky Legs competition. What was it? It had a Miss Lucky Legs competition. And the billiard table won. I thought that was very, very funny when I read it in the paper during the week. Anyway, I also had my own favorite town that I regularly picked on my radio programs. And that is Colenso. Colenso. Now, some of you may even remember that. I should always pick on Colenso. And every now and then, on radio, I said something funny about Colenso. And people took it in good spirit, had a couple of laughs, and even invited me twice to be the guest speaker at a gala function, a big fancy chow scene, a fundraising dinner at the Colenso Town Hall, attended by people from all of the surrounding towns. I remember very clearly one particular radio show that I used to have lots of fun on Channel Islam years ago. I had my program there on Friday nights. My program every Friday evening was called This Week in the News. This Week in the News. Let me tell you very quickly what happened on that particular radio show. It was a week after Ramadan. Now, I started the show like this. Alhamdulillah, the blessed month of Ramadan has just passed. What a blessing it was, eh? What a blessing. But you know what, listeners? An additional joy for me is that my parents, who go every year for Umrah in Ramadan, the full month, have just returned from Saudi Arabia. And they always bring me some really wonderful gifts. This time, they brought me an amazing bottle of attar. It really is incredible. I wish you could smell it. But wait, guess what? I want to tell you how you can actually do that. This is what I told the listeners. I'm talking about the program that was done many years ago. This is what I told the listeners, that you can actually smell. You can smell this, and I'll tell you how. You see, here in this modern studio in Durban, we have very advanced, state-of-the-art equipment. The latest stuff imported from the UK. So, dear listeners, let me just stop there and tell you this, that in that studio many years ago, it was, let me put it this way, it was a fell down studio. Sometimes we even had rats running around. And there was a microphone that was held together with masking tape. Really pokey studio. But I made it look like it was modern with the latest equipment. And also, by the way, I had no bottle of attar or anything at all with me. Anyway, this is what I said. So we have high-tech equipment here in the studio, and there's one little gadget attached to the microphone. It's called the Digital Olfactory Analyzer. Digital Olfactory Analyzer. Actually, I just made up that word. Somewhere in school a long time ago, I learned that olfactory means something to do with the nose. So I said to the listeners, the gadget is known as the Digital Olfactory Analyzer. Sounded very impressive. Now what it does is that it takes any smell, and then it analyzes it, and then it changes it into digital form. And this digital smell is then transmitted to a satellite. And from the satellite, it is beamed down to Earth. And then the digitized smell comes out of your radio. Isn't that amazing? This is what I told them. This equipment is still new technology, imported from Britain, as I said. And so the smell that comes out of your radio will last exactly 5.29 seconds. That's right, only 5.29 seconds. Now, to make it more interesting, I will have a little competition. I will put a drop of this absolutely fantastic attar on this gadget, the Digital Olfactory Analyzer. It will be digitized, go up to the satellite, and then come out of your radio, and then you can smell it. But you have only 5.29 seconds to identify this attar. And if you do identify it, then you can win amazing prizes. The first prize is 1 week's holiday to Colenso. The second prize is 2 weeks' holiday to Colenso. Hey, second prize is 2 weeks' holiday in Colenso. Right. So get ready for this magic competition. It has never been done anywhere. This experiment has never been done anywhere else in the world. It's going to be the first time. We are the pioneers of this experiment. Well, dear listeners, and I'm talking to you now, as I said, there was no attar and no analyzer. And so I pretended to put a drop on this non-existent analyzer. I said to them, are you ready? Be ready, because you have very few seconds to identify it. And then I made a sound like as if a drop is falling onto this thing. And I made a sound something like this. Right. Did you hear that? And then you know what happened, dear listeners? Guess what happened? Things went absolutely crazy, totally mad. The studio phone started ringing nonstop. The engineer's phone started ringing. My studio phone started ringing. The reception phone outside started absolutely mad, crazy. People were guessing the smell that was coming out of the radios. One fellow said, "Hey, I think the smell is chicken tikka." He must have been previously eating some chicken near his radio, and some sauce or something must have splashed onto his radio. Another person said, "Hey, can you please put the drop again, man? I ran from the kitchen, but 5.29 seconds was too quick. Do it again, please, uncle." Anyway, as I said, all hell broke loose. Then I got a hell of a shock, eh? Telkom called me and said that the telephone system in the whole of the central area of Durban is completely jammed. Whoa, that was crazy. So I quickly announced, please stop phoning. The competition is over. We have two winners already. The first prize goes to Khadija from Newlands West, and the second prize to Mr. Muhammad Khan from Polokwane. Actually, you know what? These people did call in. So that brought everything to a stop, and what a relief it was. When the show ended, and as I was about to walk out of the studio, the engineer said, "Mr. Dauji, the winner, Khadija, is on the line." Well, I took the phone, and I said, "Hello." And Khadija answered, "Ooh, I'm so excited. This is the first time I won a competition. My husband said it smells like rose water, but I told him the attar is definitely genital firdaus. I'm so excited, Mr. Dauji." Well, I replied, "Well, that's great, eh? Congratulations." So, I don't want to tell you further what happened. So, dear listeners, it was not my intention to show the level of ulluness in our community. But hey, man, smell coming out of the radio. You know, people will just believe anything, eh? As I told you, I was having lots of fun. People will just believe anything. And that's why people believe people like that fake pastor who claimed to raise that Mampara out of the coffin, raise him from the dead. And, you know, there are a whole lot of false prophets out there who are actually conning the people, making people eat grass and cockroaches and spraying them with doom and making a fortune out of these believers. Sure, this resurrection from the dead pastor has a private jet and a fleet of fancy cars. But even when everything is explained about these crooks, they still have very passionate supporters, die-hard supporters. Like take the case of Pastor Bushiri. People actually feel the charges against him are trumped up. Yeah, trumped up charges. And the word trump makes me think of my dear buddy. Hey? Trump. You know, just this week, two characters with weird hairstyles met to try to solve a big problem. One had orange-colored sutterfinni on his head, and the other a black bird's nest on his head. Of course, I'm referring to Donald J. Trump and Kim Jong-un of North Korea. These two clowns met to discuss U.S. sanctions against North Korea, because North Korea, of course, as you know, has nuclear weapons. The talks failed. Why? Well, Donald Trump says that Kim wanted all the sanctions lifted for shutting down just one or two nuclear facilities. And Kim's spokesman said, no, we said lift some sanctions only if we close one of the main nuclear facilities. Only that. And some sanctions must be lifted. So, the question is, who is lying? And speaking about lying, dear listeners, it's a big issue at the moment. Huge. For Donald Trump and Benjamin Netanyahu. Both of them are using the word witch hunt. Both are saying that people are spreading lies about them to get them out of office. So let's first look at Donald J. Trump. Donald J. Trump. J, of course, means jungly, also known as President Pagla. You know, I like him. He's quite silly and gives me lots of material for this program. And he has made many enemies of world leaders, ruffled many feathers, and made the people laugh out loudly at his antics, laughing at America. Now, for very long, right from the time that he was standing for during elections, that is, he was standing for president, all kinds of rumors were swirling around about him. All kinds of rumors. And when he became president, he fired those he appointed. In fact, he fired those people he actually appointed. They didn't last very long. because they were asking difficult questions about his behavior. Now, there's a very big investigation like what we have here, the Zondo Commission. Very, very big investigation carrying on in the United States about Pagla's dirty dealings. Robert Mueller, he's the chief investigator, is busy hearing all the evidence. Been carrying on for a couple of months now. And Donald is sweating. Particularly this week on Wednesday. Now, Donald's ex-lawyer for over 10 years, Michael Cohen, spilt the beans in front of a panel of U.S. congressmen. And he was detailing everything, every fine detail he was talking about Donald Trump, exposing him completely from the money that Michael Cohen, paid to a porn star by the name of Stormy Daniels, with whom Donald Trump had tea and nankatai. He paid her to keep quiet. How much? $130,000 on the direct instructions of Donald Trump. This is what his lawyer said. His lawyer was fed up. Which, of course, Donald always denied having an affair with her and said he knew nothing of the payments at all, that his lawyers just somehow just paid it when this Stormy Daniels was going to expose her affair with Donald Trump. And then also about a whole lot of emails about Hillary Clinton that were leaked, which Donald Trump used to attack her during the election campaign. And lots of other things that Michael Cohen detailed. It was absolutely gripping stuff. I was glued to CNN for hours while this guy spoke. And his evidence actually ran over 3 days. So for those couple of hours on Wednesday night, I was stuck to this fascinating expose of Donald Trump by his ex-lawyer, Michael Cohen. So, dear listeners, what's the big picture about this? Is this the end of Donald Trump? Is this the end of Donald Trump? Maybe, but maybe not. Look at the support he's got at the hearing. At the hearing, you had the Democratic Party congressman on one side asking Cohen questions that would disclose and confirm Donald's dirty dealings. On the other side, you had Trump's own party, the Republicans, each one saying that Cohen was a liar. In fact, they said that he's a convicted liar who will be going to jail for 3 years for lying about his own corruption. So how can you trust this guy? And all of this testimony against Donald Trump was a pack of lies, they said, this Republican congressman. Shoo! They really attacked Cohen viciously. And we now go for an ad break. Right, welcome back. This is, of course, the big picture. And I was telling you about the Republican Party members of the U.S. Congress attacking Michael Cohen through the whole hearing, calling him a liar and a convicted felon and so on. So the bottom line, the Republicans, they, of course, support Trump all the way, no matter what the story. So what impact on the ordinary Americans? What's the impact of all this testimony? Well, Donald Trump got almost all his support when he was standing for elections, and even now, from white conservatives and those who are strongly religious, especially the evangelicals. And I told you about them, the evangelicals. So, no matter what Trump did, whether he had a stormy relationship or colluded with the Russians or had shady business dealings. They are prepared to overlook all this because they believe that he is essentially a good guy. And some pastors, some priests also said that God sent this man to put America right. He is against abortion, against gay rights, etc. A man of God. They say, well, he made some mistakes. We all do. But deep down, he is a caring family man. And they will stand by him no matter what. And if you remember what he said in public in a speech about a year ago, he said, I could stand in the middle of Fifth Avenue in New York and shoot somebody dead and not lose any voters. I could stand in the middle of Fifth Avenue in New York and shoot somebody and not lose any voters. Well, it seems that he was right, eh? And to add to that, the U.S. economy is doing well, and the unemployment rate has gone down. So Cohen's testimony may not deliver the death blow to Trump's presidency. So you can switch off the keyer. Donald said, it's all lies, a witch hunt. And on the other side of the world, Benjamin Netanyahu, .com, Netanyahu.com, also said that there is a witch hunt against him. Israel's attorney general has just announced that he may charge Netanyahu for corruption. So, what did he do? What did he do? Let me spell out the five issues facing Benjamin Netanyahu. Let's look at the first one. The Israeli police began its investigation in 2017, and in the newest investigation known as Case 4000, police alleged that the owners of Bezek Israel Telecom company called Bezek Israel provided favorable coverage of Netanyahu and his wife Sarah on a news website they controlled in return for favors from communication regulators. You got that? So there's this telecom company called Bezek Israel, which has got a very major news website, and they said they will give Netanyahu and his wife, Sarah, favorable coverage as long as Netanyahu pulls some strings so that the communication regulators won't be too hard on them. Number two, and this investigation started in 2016, in a case known as Case 1000, Israeli police alleged the committing of crimes of bribery, fraud, and breach of trust by Benjamin Netanyahu. The police named Arnon Milchan. He's a Hollywood producer and an Israeli citizen, and an Australian businessman by the name of James Packer, saying that they gave gifts that include champagne, cigars, and jewelry to Netanyahu and his family. And this merchandise was worth more than $280,000, according to the Israeli police. Number three, an investigation in a case that began in 2016, and this investigation is known as Case 2000. Israeli police alleged bribery, fraud, and breach of trust by the Prime Minister relating to his dealing with Arnon Moses, the publisher of the biggest selling Israeli newspaper, Yediot Aharonot. The two men, Israeli police said, discussed ways of slowing the growth of a rival daily newspaper called Israel Hayom through legislation and other means. So they were trying to block the other newspaper. So Netanyahu was working with this newspaper, big one, very, very big one, called Yediot Aharonot. and tried to block the other newspaper. Police say they believe there was sufficient evidence to charge Moses with offering a bribe. Recordings of conversation between Netanyahu and Moses that were made by Netanyahu's former chief of staff, Ari Haro, have not been made public. Ari Haro, not so Haro now, he was the former chief of staff of Netanyahu. Spilling the beans. Number four, a preliminary police investigation began in December 2015. Ari Haro, Netanyahu's former chief of staff, as I said, is suspected by police of breach of trust and fraud involving the sale of his consultancy company known as 3H Global for $3 million. Haro set the company up after resigning as Netanyahu's bureau chief, and so on. There's a long article about that. Number five, police began preliminary investigation in November 2016. Israel's Attorney General ordered a preliminary investigation in November 2016 into a $2 billion contract awarded to Germany's ThyssenKrupp Marine Systems, that's the name of the company, to build three submarines and four patrol vehicles for Israel's Navy, according to the Justice Ministry. The intermediary on the deal, Israeli businessman Miki Ganor, was represented by Netanyahu's personal lawyer, David Shimron. Ah, so, did you get all of that? But Netanyahu already appeared in public saying that it's a witch hunt, and his party Likud and his supporters have come out in the streets to demonstrate and say that it's all lies and it's been done to damage him before the election due to take place in April. And right now, Netanyahu is seeking the support of right-wing parties and religious parties. Some of them are ultra-religious, and they seem to be supporting him. So, the possibility is that Netanyahu's Likud party and the smaller right-wing parties will join forces in a coalition to form the next government after the April elections. Well, just as in the case of Donald Trump, people are ready to forgive Netanyahu's shenanigans because he is doing good things for them. In the same way, Donald Trump, he's being forgiven for his shenanigans because he's doing good things for the religious conservatives in the U.S. So in the same way, the conservative religious Israelis will give him full support and overlook his cashing in here and there because he is doing and will do what they want. And that is keep the Palestinians in their place and continue at an accelerated pace the building of settlements throughout the West Bank. Well, I mean, in their view, a little bit of dirty cash in his pocket is, as one commentator I heard the other night saying, that this is just bakshish. And the thought occurred to me, here in South Africa, our politicians and officials have been running away with truckloads of falus. Billions of rands, and some of them are still big shots in the government. Cabinet ministers, Nohale, cabinet ministers. Frankly, while I think it's absolutely horrible what Israel is doing to the Palestinians, horrible, horrible crimes against humanity, you know, there are three things about Israel that I admire. Oh, did I give you a shock there? Three things. Number one, you know, they went to the Arab world, the Zionist Jews, came to the Arab world, took control of the whole of Palestine, declared 75% of it to be Israel, and smashed the Palestinians, and they are still smashing them. And you know what? They managed to ensure that the whole world can do nothing about it. Isn't that amazing? I mean, in a grotesque way, of course. In fact, most of the world is actually on friendly terms with Israel. even some Muslim countries, and more every day are becoming friendly. In Africa, Chad, I think that's an overwhelmingly Muslim country, has hosted Netanyahu. And the United Nations can do nothing to uphold international law against Israel. That is amazing. That this small country, tiny, about the size of the Kruger National Park, can have so much of power, so much of control. Truly amazing. As I said, in a grotesque way. Secondly, Israel is so far advanced in science and technology. Its people produce things that are instantly bought out by big international firms. New discoveries by what are called startups. Startups, small little companies that are bought out for millions and millions of rands. Absolutely remarkable. And what has the Arab world produced? All the Arab countries with all the oil wealth. What have they produced? Can anyone name me one or two things? No? Zero? Right, here's number three. The Palestinians, as I said, are suffering great injustice. Great injustice. But when Israel goes after its own citizens, Israelis, for corruption and other wrongdoings, there are no exemptions. No one is above the law. No one. Prime Minister Netanyahu is right now being investigated, going to be charged. And before him, you had ex-Prime Minister Ehud Olmert. He was sentenced to jail for 27 months for fraud and bribery. Ex-Prime Minister. Before that, we had Moshe Katsav, Israel's ex-Prime Minister, who was sentenced to 7 years in jail for rape and other sexual offenses in 2010. He served 5 years in Tronk before being released on parole. You know, I like that. No one is above the law when Israel is dealing with Israelis. Of course, when Israel is dealing with Palestinians, that's another matter completely. And I also don't want to comment about how Israel deals with its corrupt politicians and how we here deal with our chorwans. And speaking about Israel dealing with the Palestinians and how the world sees everything. It's all in the media. And then the world does nothing. Every Friday, my dal gosht gives me indigestion. Well, it doesn't digest when I see the demonstration of thousands of Palestinians at the Gaza-Israel border and how young Israeli soldiers equipped with high-powered rifles. Palestinians are no danger at all to these soldiers lined up at the border. No danger from the demonstrators. And these young soldiers shoot with these high-powered rifles and injure and kill. That is cold-blooded murder. It's been happening for so long, every Friday, and Israel literally gets away with murder. But maybe, just maybe, things are changing at last. Listen to this. Let me get you that article. Let me just look for that here. Yeah, here it is. Israel should face justice for unlawful Gaza protest killings. This is the headline of this article. Israeli security forces may have committed war crimes and crimes against humanity in killing 189 Palestinians and wounding more than 6,100 at weekly protests in Gaza last year. United Nations investigators said on Thursday, that was this week, and it was reported by Reuters news company. The independent panel said it had confidential information about those it believes to be responsible for the unlawful killings, including Israeli army snipers and commanders. It called on Israel to prosecute them. The news article says that the Israeli security forces killed and maimed Palestinian demonstrators who did not pose any imminent threat of death or serious injury to others when they were shot, nor were they directly participating in hostilities, adding that the protests had been civilian in nature. So these are civilians you're killing. The victims included children, journalists, and a double amputee who was in a wheelchair. In other words, he had lost both his legs and he was in a wheelchair. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu rejected the report and accused the UN Human Rights Council, which launched the probe, of hypocrisy and lies fueled by an obsessive hatred for Israel. Israel has said its forces opened fire to protect the border from incursions and attacks by armed militants. Whoa. Protests at the border between Israel and Gaza Strip began in March last year, with Gazans demanding Israel ease a blockade of their territory and recognition of their right to return to the lands their families fled or were forced from when Israel was founded in 1948. The panel found that 183 of the 189 protesters were killed with live ammunition. It voiced deep concern at the undisclosed rules of engagement drawn up by Israeli civilian and military leadership that apparently permitted live fire at demonstrators as a last resort, or to shoot at the legs of main inciters. Israel's notion of main inciters does not exist in international law, this report said. You can't just shoot at what you decide are main inciters, shoot at the legs or kill them. There's no such thing in international law. So, some 122 wounded have had limb amputated, including 20 children had their arms or legs amputated. No Israeli soldier was killed at the protest, although one was killed in a demonstration day, but not at the protest site, in other words, not there where it was, while four were injured. An Israeli military spokeswoman disputed this, saying the soldier was killed during a riot nearby that was designed to draw in soldiers so as to attack them. So the one soldier was killed, and it was disputed how he was killed. An Israeli military spokeswoman, the report covering March 30th to December 31st, 2018, was based on hundreds of interviews with victims and witnesses, as well as medical records, video and drone photographs. Just on May 14th, Israeli forces killed 60 demonstrators, the highest one-day death toll in Gaza since a 2014 military assault. Amnesty International said in a statement, those responsible for these deplorable crimes must not go unpunished. The findings of this report must pave the way for justice for victims of war crimes. And the International Criminal Court, this is what happened. The United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights, Michelle Bachelet, should share the findings with the ICC, the investigators said. Israel is not a member of the ICC nor recognizes its jurisdiction, but the ICC court opened a preliminary investigation into allegations of Israeli human rights abuses on Palestinian territory in 2015. So the panel chairman, the Santiago Cantón, an Argentine legal expert, said some of these violations may constitute war crimes or crimes against humanity and must be immediately investigated by Israel. Our investigation found that the demonstrators were overwhelmingly unarmed, even if they were not at all times peaceful, he told a briefing. 35 children, 2 journalists, and 3 clearly marked paramedics were amongst those killed by Israeli forces in violation of international humanitarian law. We are saying that they have intentionally shot children. They have intentionally shot with people with disabilities. They have intentionally shot journalists, said panel member Sarah Hussein, who is a lawyer at the Supreme Court of Bangladesh. We found that one person, a double amputee, was shot and killed as he sat in his wheelchair. On two separate days, two people visibly walking on crutches were shot in the head. They were killed, she added. Israel said, of course, that its forces have at times come under gun and grenade attacks during the protests. Panel member Betty Murungi also said Gaza authorities should stop the use of incendiary kites and balloons. The call by a UN panel to bring Israeli... Anyway, I read this article and it said that they have identified... They have identified some of these snipers, and they will then face international sanctions. Perhaps they can't travel somewhere, or if they do travel, they would be arrested and brought in front of the International Criminal Court. Well, there you are. The tide seems to be turning, inshallah, and those who have killed the Gazans in cold blood could face the might of the law, inshallah. Right, time is running out, and it's time once again for light at the end of the tunnel. Right, let's see what I got for you now. Koos and Julius are on a hunting trip in the Kruger National Park, the Kruger Park as it's called now. They were walking through the bush for about 2 hours, then Julius stopped and he says to Koos, "Hey boss, I am not feeling too good. I feel sick." And Koos said, "Okay, we can walk back to the bucky." So they walk back. And after 15 minutes of walking, Julius suddenly collapses onto the ground. And Koos, he panics and he calls 911. And the operator answers and says, "This is 911. What is your emergency?" And Koos says, "My friend fell down, eh? I think it's a heart attack. I think he's dead. What do I do?" And the operator answers, "Sir, first make sure that he is dead." And the operator listens and hears a loud bang. Tishoo! And Koos comes back on the phone and says, "Okay, he's dead now. What do I do now, eh?" let's see, we got a minute? Yes. Here's the last one. Very quickly, the last one. A big old cross-looking man went into the bank in Overport and said to the lady at the inquiries desk, "I want to open an account, so make it sharp, okay?" And the lady was shocked and said, "I beg your pardon, sir." And he answered very gruffly, "You must put some oil in your ears. What, you deaf or something? I want to open an account. Don't waste my time, you silly goat." Oh, the lady said, "Sir, why are you talking to me so rudely?" And he said, "Hey, Futsek, and get someone else if you got no brains to do the job, okay?" And she was so upset and told him, "Sir, wait here, I'm going to call the manager." The manager, looking very cross, he comes up to him and says, "Sir, what's the problem?" And the old man said, "You know what, I just won 50 million rands in the lotto, and I want to open an account with your bank." And the manager replied, "Ah, sir, and this silly cow is giving you a hard time, eh?" Well, that's all. This is A.B. Dawji bidding you all. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.